This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We begin. We're going to be learning a little bit of this week's parsha, Parshas Chayisara, that speaks about the unfortunate passing of our first mother, Sarah Imenu. Sarah. So let's look at the first three psukim, and then we'll delve a little bit further into it. The psukim tell us, Vayiyu Chayi Sarah, it was the life of Sarah, Mea Shana, like we mentioned earlier, 100 years. The Esrim Shana, 20 years. The Sheva Shanim, 7 years. Shnei Chayi Sarah, these were the years of Sarah's life. Vatama Sarah Bekiryas Arba Hi Chevron. Sarah passed away in Kiryas Arba, which is known as Chevron. Rashi says, why was Chevron called Kiryas Arba? Kiryah is a city. Arba is 4. Rashi tells us there were 4 giants there. Giants. Eich omrim giant be'ivrit. Anakim. Anakim. Arba anakim be'chevron. What were their names? Rashi says, Achiman, Sheshai, Talmai, and their father. Okay, so there were 4 giants there. The whole city was known by these giants. Now we have to understand, why is it necessary for the Torah to tell us at this point that the reason why Chevron was called Kiryas Arba is because of the 4 giants? The Torah has already mentioned the city of Chevron many, many, many times. And pinked here, you know, pinked is Yiddish. Right here, the Torah says, why is it called Chevron? Why is it called Kiryas Arba? Because of the 4 giants. We haven't heard one word about these 4 giants until now. And over here, by the death of Sarah, the Torah tells us that the reason why Chevron was called Kiryas Arba was because of these 4 giants. Okay, we'll come to understand that. Be'eretz Canaan, she passes away in Canaan. Vayavoy Avraham, Avraham came, lispod l'Sarah, to eulogize Sarah, v'liv kosa, and to cry for her. So Avraham came to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. From where did Avraham come? Avraham had just come from the Akedah, right? Where he tried to sacrifice his son Yitzchak. Where was the Akedah performed? On Har HaMoriah, the Temple Mount. Avraham at this time lived in Beersheba. So he comes home from Har HaMoriah. He goes from Yerushalayim to Beersheba, okay? And he knocks on the door. Sarah, I'm home. Guess what? I almost killed Yitzchak, but it didn't happen. No answer. There's no answer. Sarah, where are you? No answer. No, Sarah, what happened? She's not in the house. She's not in the house. Where is she? It says she died in Chevron. How in the world did Sarah get from Beersheba, where they live, to Chevron? Right? All the time when Abraham went to Shalim to slaughter him there. Meanwhile, Sarah's back home making a cholent for Shabbos in Beersheba. Yeah? How did she get to Chevron? Why did she pass away in Chevron? We'll see. Vayakam Avraham Eyal Pnei Meso, Pasuk Gimel, Avraham gets up from upon the face of his deceased. Vayadaber El Bnei Ches Lemar, he speaks to the children of Ches to purchase the land, which it would ultimately be what? The Ma'aras HaMachpelah. But we also have to try to understand, what does it mean? Vayakam Avraham Eyal Pnei Meso. There's an extra word in this Pasuk, right? It should say, Vayakam Avraham Me'al Meso. Why Me'al Pnei Meso? What, he was staring at her face? It says, Vayakam Avraham Me'al Pnei Meso. Why does the Torah say, from upon her face? Why dafka her face? Okay, so the first thing we're going to examine is, it says, Avraham eulogized Sarah. Yeah, he gave her a hesped. What did he say? What did he say? You know, unfortunately, you go to a levaya, you hear somebody give a hesped, they talk about the qualities of the person who passed away, they say they were a good guy, they did tzedakah, they learned Torah, and so on, they davened. What did Avraham say about Sarah? It doesn't say in the Torah. All it says is he came to eulogize her. What did he say? Very interesting. The Medrash tells us that Avraham said the following. Eishes Chayil miyimtza v'rochok mipnina michra. The whole parak of Eishes Chayil that we sing Friday night. Right? So the first thing he says, he comes home. He sees Sarah's not in the house. What does he say? Eishes Chayil miyimtza. Who could find this woman of valor? Where is she? What happened to her? Then the Medrash says, if you look at number 2, he said, Batach la leiv bala, I trusted her. When did Avraham trust her? When they went down to Mitzrayim, and Avraham says, you know, you're a beautiful woman. I'm afraid you're going to be taken by the king. Tell them that we're brother and sister, because if you tell them that we're husband and wife, they're going to kill me. So Avraham put his trust in Sarah. batach la leiv ba'ala, and so on and so forth. If you look, you know, we say haisa ka'ani al socher, right? Mechat alacha. What do we say for the letter vav? Vatakam be'od laila. She gets up at night. When did Sarah get up at night? When Abraham went to slaughter Yitzchak at the Akedah, it says Vayashkim Abraham Baboka. He woke up early in the morning, right, to take his son. Who woke up in the middle of the night to prepare their lunch? Sarah. Sarah didn't know where they were going. Abraham says to his wife, look, I'm going to take Yitzchak on a journey. Sarah says, where are you going? Don't worry. Sarah said, okay, let me make you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. She gets up in the middle of the night. That's what it means, Vatakam Be'od Laila. Okay. Now we have to try to understand, how did Sarah get to Hebron? Again, she lived in Be'er Sheva, right? Sarah lived in Be'er Sheva. Why does the Torah say she passed away in Hebron? How did she get to Hebron? So listen to this and then we'll read it inside. We know that how did Sarah die? The Satan came to Sarah and said, Sarah, guess what Abraham is doing to your son? Sarah said, what? So the Satan says, you know what he's doing? He's taking a knife. He's about to slaughter him and kill him. Sarah said, nah, come on, I don't believe you. Satan said, yeah, why do you think he went with that big knife? He's not going to shecht an animal, he's going to shecht your son. Sarah said, what do I do? So she tried to take out her cell phone to call Abraham. The only thing is the cell phone wasn't invented yet, right? So here she hears that he went to Har HaMoriah to slaughter Yitzchak, and she has no way of contacting him and say, stop, what are you, crazy? You're going to shecht Yitzchak? So she had she wanted a telescope. She wanted a look from Be'er Sheva to Har HaMoriah. There are no telescopes either. So what do? If you want to look very far away, you go to the Jolly Green Giant, right? She'll go to the giants. Remember, why was Hebron called Kiryas Arba? Because it had four giants. So she figures, let me go to the giants. They could see far away, and they'll tell me what my husband's doing in Yerushalayim. So she travels to Hebron. She goes to Achiman Sheshai Talmai. She says, look, I'll give you a few bucks. Could you see far off in the distance what Abraham is doing? So they look in the distance. They look up to Har HaMoriah. They say, yeah, there's this old man with a long white beard. He has a sword lifted up, and he's about to slaughter the kid. She fainted and she passed away. So you want to know what Sarah was doing in Hebron? She was going to ask the giants to try to see what is going on with Abraham. Take a look at number 3.
Why did God even give Sarah?
Yeah.
The benefit.
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
Yeah.
Why God didn't give to Sarah the benefit of the tzaddikut that Abraham Avinu had, and he didn't ask why, what, and how? He took his son and he went to take him to Korban to Akadosh Baruch Hu. Forget about the Satan. Why Hashem send the Satan? Satan don't go by himself.
Hashem don't have to send Satan.
Last week, we learned an incredible thing. Sarah,
if you don't believe in right, you're going to believe in wrong.
See, we have a Talmud Chacham over here, a Meir Weiss, remembers the shir from last week. Last week we learned, remember when Sarah was 90 years old and the angel came and the angel tells Abraham, guess what? In 1 year you're going to have a child. So Sarah takes a look at herself. She's 90 years old. Impossible. She laughed at the report. So God says, you're going to not believe a true report? The way you're going to pass away is by accepting a false report. You see, the way life works is, when you don't accept the truth, God makes you accept sheker. That's the way it works. You have a Torah, it's a Torah's MS. You don't accept the truth, then Hashem says, you don't want to accept the truth, you will accept the biggest shekarim in the world. So Sarah did not want to accept the true report that she was going to have a child. She was forced to accept an untrue report that Yitzchak was killed.
But you told us that the Satan showed her the image of Abraham killing her son, and her heart stopped. But now we learn that she went to Hebron.
Yeah, there's another world. Actually, there's another way.
Yeah. Satan showed, look, you know, everybody knows, you can't believe what you see on, we don't say it in Beis HaKnesses, you can't believe everything you see, right? So just because the Satan shows you pictures, most of the pictures we see on screens are not true, right? So you can't believe everything you see.
He also said, almost.
Almost. Kemat v'lo nechshad.
Until she got kemat, it was already too late.
Yeah, yeah. She went. Right, very good. That she heard.
When you say a psura to somebody, you got to be careful how you word it.
That's exactly right.
A little thing like this can disrupt the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the other things is that she had more prophecy than Avraham Avinu.
She had more prophecy than Avraham Avinu, which is a topic that has to be discussed by itself. How is that possible? Okay, look in number three. Look in number three, second paragraph. This comes from the Sefer Shach al HaTorah. The Shach al HaTorah is referred to as one of the Gurei Ha'ari. What is a gur? What's a gur is a lion cub, right? A young lion. An Ari is a big, mature lion. A gur, right? A gur is a lion cub, a young lion. The Arizal, one of the greatest Mekubalim of all time, had many students. One of his students was the Shach al HaTorah. And the question, another question that we're going to address is, Avraham comes to eulogize his mother, to eulogize his wife, yeah? Somebody is conspicuously absent. Who? Yitzchak! Where was Yitzchak by his mother's Levaya? Where was he? What happened? Why wasn't Yitzchak present at the Levaya of his mother? Look in the second paragraph. Listen to this. Od vayavo Avraham lispod velifkos. Okay, Avraham came to eulogize and to cry. V'nafal al pene meso. He falls on the face of his deceased. Kedei le'orer ha'hesped v'habachi. To arouse, eulogizing and crying. But the pasuk says, vayavo Avraham lispod l'sara. He came to eulogize and to cry, but he didn't actually do it. Even though he came to for the purpose of eulogizing and for the purpose of crying, he didn't actually give Sarah Hesped, the Medr says. Why? He was too happy. Too happy? What was he so happy about? You know, it's one thing, you know, your wife harasses you, but Sarah was a nice lady. What was he happy about? He was so happy that he passed the test of the Akedah. He was flying high. He was in the clouds, that he couldn't bring himself to cry. So that's why the pasuk says, he came to eulogize, but he didn't actually do it. He didn't actually do it. And the Shach says that's why he didn't bring Yitzchak with him, because if he would have brought Yitzchak with him, he would have been so overjoyed that, look, I have such a son that's willing to be sacrificed for Hashem, he wouldn't have had a fighting chance to even try to eulogize. So he said, look, you stay home, because if I see you there, Yitzchak, I'm going to be so overjoyed that you were willing to go through with the Akedah, then I'm not going to even be able to give a hesped. But listen to the following explanation. Look on the sixth line in the second paragraph, number three. Shamati. The Shach says, I heard. Shenimtza b'zohar. It's found in the Zohar. Shema shelo hevi Yitzchak imoy. The reason why Avraham did not bring Yitzchak. Lefisha shachat by Avraham rov shnayim. Then not only did Avraham try to shecht Yitzchak, he did shecht Yitzchak. He slaughtered most of Yitzchak's two simanim, or the simanim, the windpipe and the food pipe. Okay? And Yitzchak was practically dead. So where did Yitzchak go? The Malachim took him up to Gan Eden. He convalesced in Gan Eden for 3 years until he recovered. When he came back, Avraham said, I thought you were dead. Avraham made the bracha, Baruch atah Hashem, mechaye hamesim. How do we know this? Because do you remember when Yaakov came to steal the brachos from Yitzchak? So Yaakov put on Esav's clothing to try to steal the brachos. So Yitzchak, of course, you know, was blind, right? Yeah, Yitzchak.
But we started something else. We started that actually when we were supposed to kill Yitzchak, to kill him. I mean,
yeah.
With a knife. We find another deer or some something like that.
Yeah.
He got stuck with his. And he killed that instead. So,
In other words,
some of the stuff that we study, I mean, that we learned by now.
Correct.
Totally,
that's what the Chumash says, that instead of Yitzchak, he shechted the Ayal. V'hinei Ayal echad nechaz v'asvach. But that he shechted completely. Yitzchak, he shechted 90%. There was still a little bit left with Yitzchak. So,
that
he didn't touch him.
He didn't touch him because...
Okay, the way you have to read that, according to what we're saying, is that when the Malach cried out, don't do anything to him, it means don't do anything else. After he already took most of his life, The Malach said, don't do anything else.
It's kind of a contradiction.
Slightly.
It kind of makes you between, like, it is true, not true, or this, which story it is true, because this is kind of either or. Him, kill him, nothing happened, and you go back home, and all of a sudden, it did cut him off. It did. I mean, actually, he's dead. And then he got, so why got the deer? Why he got the deer for?
Because the Malach said, stop. At that point, he hadn't finished the karban. It's not good enough just to slaughter rov simanim. You have to slaughter the whole thing. So at that point, the Malach cried out, "Altas lo ma'uma, stop, hold it right there." So instead, he slaughtered the ayal completely.
Yeah, but it's also another thing. But he's saying that he come back home and he did pass the test and he's happy, but he passed the test that he didn't kill his son. Yeah. So how come he's happy that he's happy that he killed his son? Because
he's happy that when God asked him to do it. He didn't withhold.
Wait. No. I don't want to.
So let's talk about it after, okay? We'll talk about it after, okay? So look what he says. Remember when Yaakov came to take the brachos from Yitzchak. So what did Yitzchak say? Yitzchak couldn't see; he was blind. But Yitzchak smelled the garment of Yaakov, and he says, "Yaakov." He didn't know it was Yaakov; he thought it was Esav. You smell like Gan Eden. How did Yitzchak know what Gan Eden smelled like? The answer is because he spent 3 years there recovering after the Akedah. That's what the Shachar HaTorah says.
But if it says in the pasuk, Malach told him, "Al tishlach et yadcha el ha'nar," that means if he already sent the hands to the Nar, it means he already did. But if he said, "Al tishlach et yadcha el ha'nar," that means he was about to and he didn't do it. So where did this come from?
This is something else. This is the Zohar, and the other one we study about the.
No, you're quoting a pasuk. You know, the Zohar can't argue with the pasuk. Al tishlach yado al hanar means don't continue to send. Don't. Al tishlach means be'asid, in the future. In the future.
Kabbalah, which is totally different books. It's more into it. The one you studied, the five books, the Bereshit, whatever it is, I think it's in Bereshit. It's on Bereshit. It's not that more.
No. Al tishlach yadcha lanar. It's not a contradiction. Nothing in the Zohar could contradict the psukim. It just means al tishlach yadcha lanar means don't continue. Tishlach is lashon asid. Don't continue to send forth. It's not the simple interpretation of the pasuk. It is one of the interpretations of the pasuk. Okay, I'm not going to get bogged down. Yeah, 3 years. 3 years. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying that. He almost killed him, he died, he came back, and then he went back?
It's not clear that he actually died. He suffered a fatal blow, and he had to recover. Okay? We'll leave it at that. We'll leave the rest for you to think about. Look in Parshas Chayisar in the beginning. Abraham now comes to the children of Ches. He comes to Ephron to purchase a field, to purchase a plot of land. Okay? And there's one idea that Abraham tells them again and again and again and again. We know no phrase in the Torah is superfluous, right? Not one word in the Torah is extra. And if the Torah uses a phrase again and again, there's a reason why it uses it a second time, and if it uses it a third time, there's a reason it uses it a third time. Abraham comes to the B'nai Ches, and he says, if you look in Pasuk Dalet. Avram says, "Ger v'toshav anochi imachem, tenuli achuzas kever imachem, v'ekbera mesi." Let me bury my deceased. Then again, Avram says, "Kivar mesecha." I want to bury. They say, "Bury your dead." Then Avram says, "Likbar es mesi," to bury my dead. Give me this plot of land. Avram says, "Kivar mesecha." Again. Seven times Abraham and the B'nai Ches say to each other that the purpose of the purchase of this land is for what? To bury the dead. Now, of course it's to bury the dead. After Abraham says, "I want to buy this land to bury my wife," what else would Abraham want to buy it for? Of course he's buying the land to bury Sarah. Sarah's dead. He's not buying it to build a house for Sarah. He's not buying it to dance with Sarah. It's very clear that he's buying it to bury her. Why does the Torah have to reiterate again and again and again and again and again seven times, Kivar Mesecha, to bury the dead? The first time Avraham gives him the money, shows him the money, look, I want to buy this land to bury the dead. So the rest of the conversation should be, should we buy the land? Should we not buy the land? Are we going to sell it to you? Are we not going to sell it to you? Why do we have to reiterate every time, Likbar Esmei Secha? Also, another point you have to think about is the first six times it says, Kivar Mesecha, to bury the dead, to bury the dead. And the seventh time it says, V'yes Mescha Kivar, the other way around. The first six times it says, Kivar Mesecha, first the word Kivar, and then Mesecha, the dead. And the seventh time it says, Mescha, you're dead, Kivar, to bury. How many people are buried in the Ma'ara Samachpela?
Eight people and one head.
Good, very good. Reuven got it. How many people are buried in Ma'aret HaMachpelah? Eight people and one head, right? Who's buried? Who's buried? Abraham, Sarah. Yitzchak, Rivka. Yaakov and Leah. Who are we missing? Adam and Chava. That's eight. And Esau's head.
How
did
they get buried there?
The first one. Who buried them?
Hold on. Yeah, but they buried there before even Sarah.
Before Sarah. Before. In fact, you talk about the Zohar. The Zohar says when Abraham came to bury Sarah in the Ma'aret HaMachpelah, Adam and Chava got up. They said, you're not coming here.
To
Sarah and to Abraham. So Abraham said, what's the problem? They said, we're embarrassed to have Sarah come. Why? Because they said, if not for us, mankind would have never died. So we're responsible that Sarah lived only 127 years. It's too embarrassing for us. And the Zohar goes on to talk about the whole conversation, how Abraham had to convince Adam and Chava to let them bury Sarah there. That's a different thing to talk about.
But they were dead.
They were dead.
So how did he talk to them? He talked to the dead?
We'll leave that for now. We'll leave it for now.
How many are
we'll leave it for now. So altogether, eight people. Eight people. Oh, Esau's head?
Wait, before Abraham bought the
land.
Buried,
yeah.
So Amshechet owned the land where Adam and Chava were buried.
Correct. Correct. Now, okay, so again, how is it, if you want to know very briefly, how is Esau's head buried there? When Yaakov Avinu had passed away, and the sons, the 12 Shatim, were carrying him back to bury him in the Ma'aret HaMachpelah, Esav said, you're not burying Yaakov there over my dead body. So they said, fine. And ultimately, they killed Esav, and his head went rolling into the Ma'aret HaMachpelah. It's a separate topic in and of itself. So altogether, there are eight people there, plus Esav's head. How many people were buried there at this time?
Today?
No. At the time when they're about to bury Sarah. Adam and Chava. How many more people were they going to bury there? Six. That's why Avraham says, Kivar Mesecha, six times. One is for Sarah. The second one is for Avraham. Kivar Mesecha, Yitzchak. Kivar Mesecha, Rivka. Kivar Mesecha, Yaakov. Kivar Mesecha, Leah. Yeah, he already, Leah. Not Rachel, Leah. He
buried there, that's why he bought it.
He wrote in Ephrat. Okay, so the Vilna Gaon points out that Avraham was purchasing the Ma'aret HaMachpelah was aware that this would be the burial plot of all the Avos and Imahos, and that's why he reiterates six times Kivar Mesecha, because it wasn't just for one individual, it was for six individuals. Six individuals. Why does the Pasuk say Kivar Mesecha? First bury, and then the word Mesecha. Kivar Mesecha. Because normally you bury people when they're dead, right? But tzaddikim afilu b'misasan kruyin chayim. Tzaddikim, even when they're dead, they're considered chayim in some way. So the Gemara asks, so then what do they need tchias hameisim for? If tzaddikim are always alive, why do you need tchias hameisim? The Gemara says in Shabbos, no, that one moment before tchias hameisim, they have misa to be able to have tchias hameisim. That's what the Gemara says in Shabbos. So for tzaddikim, first comes kivura, and then comes misa. That's why for these six individuals it says kivar mesecha, because they were all tzaddikim. So first comes kivura, then comes misa, the Vilna Gaon says. But the seventh time, what does Avraham say? V'yes mescha kivar. Who was the seventh time for? Esav. Esav's head. Esav was a rasha. By Rasha, first comes the Misa, and then comes the Kvura. That's why the seventh time it doesn't say Kvar Mesecha, it says V'yes Mescha Kvar. Fine. Let's look at Pasuk Gimel one more time. Okay? Pasuk Gimel, it says, Vayakam Avraham. Avraham got up. It's in number one. Me'al Pinei Meso, from upon the face of his deceased. Why does it use the word Pinei, the face of? He got up. He cried over her. He fell down crying, and he got up. What do I need to know? He got up from her face. The Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, what happens when a person passes away? What happens? What does the Ma'al Chamavis look like? What does he do? What's the procedure? So look at number 5. Take a look at number 5. This is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Amru alav al Ma'al Chamavis. They say about the Ma'al Chamavis, Shekulai male einayim. He's full of eyes. Okay? That's what he looks like. He's full of eyes. Okay? So if you see someone full of eyes, run. Okay? Bishas petirasai shalchola. When a sick person passes away, Omed me'al mirashosav. The Ma'al Chamavis stands on top of his head. V'charbo shlufa biyado, with his sword extended. Okay? V'tipa shalmara tuyabo. There's a drop of mara. There's a drop of mara. What's mara? Gol. Bitterness. There's a drop of bitterness suspended on the edge of the sword. Okay? Kivan shechole ro'o. So when the sick person sees the Ma'al Chamavis, he shakes. He titters. He opens, right? What happens when he opens up his mouth? Okay, ro. Mizdazeh, he shakes. Uposeach piv, he opens his mouth. Vizarka letoch piv, the Ma'al Chamavis then sends this poison into his mouth. Mimena meis, from this drop of poison, the person dies. Mimena masriach, from that drop of poison, the person rots. Umimena panav moirikais, and from that drop of poison, the face turns sallow, turns green. That's what the Gemara says. That this drop of poison that the Ma'al Chamavis has causes the person to die, causes the body to rot, causes the face to turn colors. Says Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz. You ever hear the name? Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz was one of the greatest disseminated Marbitzei Torah in our history. Throughout his career, he lived in the 1700s. Throughout his career, he influenced more than 24,000 students. Okay, in the 1700s.
Almost like Rabbi Kiva.
Listen to this. Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, in order to get into the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, they didn't let anybody in. You had to have certain VIP card. What was the quality you had to have? If you died through the Ma'al Chamavis, they didn't let you in. Big tzaddikim, they don't pass away through the Ma'al Chamavis. They die through Misas Neshika, which means Hashem himself, Kiviyachal, takes your neshama. He doesn't let the Ma'al Chamavis intervene. Okay? So Avraham Avinu, was Avraham around at the time that Sarah passed away? No, Avraham was at the Akedah by Haram Moriah. Sarah was by Hebron. So Avraham was wondering, can I bury Sarah in Ma'aras HaMachpelah? How do I know how she died? Maybe she died with the Ma'al Chamavis. But there's one trick. He looked at her face. He saw Ein Panav Moirikos. He saw the face wasn't green. Oh, the face isn't green. He knew she died through Misas Neshika. That's why the Pasuk says, Vayakam Avraham Eyal Pinei Mesa. He got up from her face. There was an indication on her face. Her face was shining. So obviously, she did not die through the Ma'al Chamavis. She died through the Misas Neshika. That's what Yonasan Abishad says. By the way, the Gemara says that these three drops, Mimena Mes, Mimena Masriach, Mimena Panav Mairikos. That's how a person dies. That's how the body rots. That's how the face turns green. You know what these three drops are? The Panim Yafos, the Hafla, says like this. The Mishnah tells us in Perkei Avos, there are three things that take you out of this world. Hakina, the Hataiva, the Hakavoid, Maitzian, Es HaAdam, and HaOlam. There are three things that we have in this world that make us miserable, that destroy our lives. Kina, jealousy, because you can have all the money in the world, you can have all the possessions in the world, you can have all the happiness in the world, but you see somebody has something you don't have, oy, how it bothers you, because you think he took it from you. The psychology of kina is he took it from you. What do you mean, but you never had it? No. if he wouldn't be here, I would have it. That's the way the Yetzer Hara works. The way kina works is, and you can't live. It takes you out of this world. That's kina. Taiva. 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 The way, mi yeshlo mane rotza masayim. You have 100 bucks, you want 200 bucks. You have, right? Yeshlo masayim rotza dalin meos. You have 200 bucks, you want 400 bucks. Reb Tzvi, a guy who has 100 bucks, how much does he want? 200. A guy has 200, how much does he want?
If I have 100, I want 1,000. I don't want 100.
I want 50.
What? Again. What's your name? 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 Ich Corinna, what? Max? So listen. The Chazal tell us. Chazal tell us. Somebody who has 100, he wants 200, yeah? Someone who has 200, he wants 400. So who's missing more? The guy who has 100, he only wants another 100. The guy who has 200 wants another 200. The more you have, the more you're missing.
But this is it's obviously we're all the same. If you have a dollar, you want to have two. It's only for security. It's not for to have...
The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that human nature is, no matter how much you have, you want more. You want more. In fact, ta'ava is like salt water. It's like salt water. The more you take, the more you want. In fact, the Gemara tells us, Eiver katan yesh ba'adam. Masbio ra'ev. Every man has an Eiver katan. You satisfy it, it becomes more starving. You starve it, it becomes more... Yes, it becomes more sad. That is the nature of all desire and all pleasure. The more you have, the more you partake, the less you have, the more you want. And of course... The third thing is kavod. The third thing is kavod. If somebody desires kavod, there's no end. Because kavod is not a tangible thing. You should know, if a person wants kavod, there's no end to how much he could want. These are the three things that takes a person out of this world. These are the three drops of the Yetzer Hara of the Malach HaMaves. Mimena Meis, Mimena Masriach, Mimena Panav Mayrikos. These are the three weapons that eventually the Malach HaMaves uses to take us in this world. But even while we are here in this world, a person who indulges in kina, taiva, and kavod, he's physically here, but it's ke'ilu, he's already motzi min ha'olam. It's not a life. Sara Imenu, how do we know she died with Misas Nashika? Because at the beginning of the parasha it says, Vayiyu chaye Sara me'o shana v'esam shana v'sheva shanim, shenei chaye Sara, which Rashi says means, kulan shavin latova. They were all equally good, they were all satisfied. So if she was able to have such a satisfying life, that means she had overcome kina, taiva, and kavod. Otherwise, Rashi would never tell us it's kulan shavin latova. The only way Sarah could have viewed her life as kulan shavin latova is if she had overcome kina, taiva, and kavod. Oh, you overcome kina, taiva, and kavod? Then the Malach HaMaves can't take you away with those three drops. Mimena meis, mimena masriach, mimena panav marikos. The only reason she went is because why? Misas Nashika, that's why she was allowed into the Maras HaMachpelah. And that's why it says by Avraham, Dayakam, Avraham, Meyal Pnei Meso. He looked at her face, he saw in her face that she didn't die from the Malach HaMaves. Okay. While we're on the topic of Hesped, and since this is the occasion of the 11 months for Ephraim's father, it's very interesting in general. Throughout the ages, different Gedolei Yisrael, different sages, have requested different things for their Hespedim. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, look at number 11. Mishetziva shelo yaspeduhu shomen lo. If you command somebody who gives a command, don't eulogize me, you listen to him. You listen to him. So if somebody gives an order before they pass away, I don't want a Hesped, you're supposed to listen to them. Nevertheless, when the Pnei Yehoshua passed away, Bnei Yeshua is one of the greatest sages, also the 1700s. He was Rabban Shel Kol Bnei HaGola. And he requested that nobody give him a hesped. He made a request that he doesn't want any hespedim, any eulogies. Nevertheless, the Noda Behuda got up to issue a hesped for the Bnei Yeshua. And the first thing he said was, even though the Bnei Yeshua said he doesn't want a hesped, we don't have to listen to him. Because he is allowed to give up and forego his own honor. But since he's the leader of the Jewish people, by honoring him, we're honoring the Jewish people, and that honor he has no right to forego. And they were maspid, the Bnei Yehoshua. Very interesting, in the 1800s, there was a gadol by the name of Rav Itzla Peterberg. Rav Itzla Peterberg, before he passed away, he commanded that he doesn't want any hespedim. He doesn't want anyone to eulogize him. And after he passed away, he was criticized by a friend of his, whose name was Rav Naftali Amsterdam. And Rav Naftali said, I can't understand why my dear friend Rav Itzla asked that we shouldn't eulogize him, especially because we both have a common Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who asked that we should eulogize him when he passed away. So why is my friend not following in the path of his Rebbe? Why is he asking not to be eulogized? Later, when Rav Naftali was on his deathbed, he made the same request that he doesn't want anyone to eulogize him. So they asked him, here you are, you just criticized your friend a few years ago that he didn't want a hesped, and you criticized him, why is he not asking for a hesped? And now you yourself are asking us not to give you a hesped. So he said, no, here's the difference. Rav Itzla, he deserved a hesped. So I criticized him for not wanting hesped. But he said, but me, I don't deserve a hesped. I don't deserve it, so therefore I don't want you to give me a hesped. We'll end off with one thing. The Shulchan Aruch writes, when it comes to a hesped, mosifim bohem ktsas. You're allowed to exaggerate a little bit. You're allowed to exaggerate.
Ktsas. You don't want to give them more.
A little, you're allowed to exaggerate it a little bit.
Same more.
Kedoshim. A little bit. Kedoshim, right?
Right.
Why are you allowed to... So the question is, either you're allowed to lie, or you're not allowed to lie. Why are you allowed to exaggerate a little bit? Why only a little bit? So the Taz... Someone here related to the Taz? Somebody here wants somebody related to the Taz.
Exactly.
Can you tell me that? No? Okay, the Taz says like this. Every human being is a little bit better than you think he is. Why is that? Because let's say you see a guy, he gives $100 to tzedakah. Let's say you would have asked him for $103. He would have given it also. They only asked for 100, so he gave 100. But he would have done a little bit more. So the fact that he didn't do it, it doesn't matter to Hashem, because in the eyes of Hashem, if you would have wanted to do it, it's considered like you did it. So therefore, let's say he learns an hour a day. Let's say you would have asked him, you want to learn an hour in 3 minutes? He would have done it. He would have done it. So in the eyes of Hashem, it's considered like he did a little bit more. So every human being is really a little bit better than you think he is. So to exaggerate a little bit is not an exaggeration, because it's true. And we have to realize that no matter what human being we look at, and however we think in our mind, whatever level they're on, we should realize that every person is really a little bit better than we think he is. In our mind, we just see what they do, but we can't see what's in their heart. And Chazal tell us that in the heart of every person, they're certainly a little bit better than they are, because everyone would like to be a little bit better. And the eyes of Hashem, just the desire to be better, is also something very valuable. Learning tonight was Zeicher Nishmas, Rav Yosef Ben Ephraim, Shabi Yomelitz Yosher, for the family, for your family, for all your relatives, for all your friends, and for all Klal Yisrael.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.